We would like to thank such people as Mai Sinclair, Rex Quantum, Michael Rodriguez, Gavin, and Christopher Gillis. They all went to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and you can too, to help support this network, this show, and other shows like this on this network. Once again, that is patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week, for our 225th episode, we are talking about Super Mario Brothers 2, which is
Super Mario USA.
Yep. It is a platformer developed and published by Nintendo for the NES in 1988.
Yeah. In America. But there's all kinds of nonsense that you already know. That we shouldn't even say. There's not one person listening to this who doesn't know.
Yeah, like this
I guarantee it.
This is we coined a term around it, which is the Doki Doki fact, which is kind of a nickname for just a little piece of trivia that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody was talking about Super Mario Brothers 2 and you said, wait a minute, stop the presses. Did you know this wasn't originally a Mario game? But it actually kind of was. They would say, yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Get away from me.
Please leave.
They would say, go home.
You want to be as far away from me as possible.
Yeah. And then you'd point to your arm and then you'd kiss it. And mm-hmm. then you'd say, when this motherfucker goes off, you need to be in another building.
Yep.
Because if you tell me that shit,
mm-hmm.
you're done.
Yeah. You better be at least two zip codes away. Cause yeah, I'm coming for you.
My timeline will continue, and your time, that will be the story of you.
Yes.
Will be you mouthed off to me about fucking Doki Doki Panic in this bar, and me and all these motherfuckers in this bar are going to converge on you, and the camera's going to go to an overhead shot, and then when we separate, there's just going to be a skeleton on the floor. Just holding up one finger and going, actually.
Yeah.
And then we're going to step on the skull.
Yeah. Like the Terminator. My fists are like a swarm of piranhas.
Yes.
Yeah.
You do not want to fuck with them.
No.
It's everyone knows that it becomes a thing where it's like, it's funny too, because the fact that everyone knows it makes it less trivia just because it's common knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's not really trivial.
No,
it's not. You know, it's like, it is pretty important to the origin. It is the origins of the game.
Yes.
You know, it's like how the game came about. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about some of that a little bit later, as well as Lost Level shit. But let's talk about what this actually is.
Yeah.
In the version that we got in America and Japan eventually got as Super Mario 2 USA.
Yes. Yeah, because usually that conversation about the origins of this game kind of supersedes the fact that it does some really weird, interesting, and good stuff. This is an amazing game, Gary.
Yeah, this is my favorite NES Mario.
In a walk.
Like, it's more than Mario 3, actually. Like, I think it's more interesting. It's weirder. I think it has a much better, like, much more personality
mm-hmm.
to it. Like, it's maybe not quite as tight. But I also like the level lengths. I think Mario, when they get those like micro levels, mm-hmm. the fact that you can beat any Mario 3 level by holding to the right for like 7 seconds right. kind of bums me out how short those stages are.
Yeah.
I like this more than I like Mario 3. And clearly more than I like Mario 1.
Yeah. And this is the introduction of like stuff that I really enjoy about Mario. Both of us are Super Mario World fellas. Mm-hmm. You can see a line from here to there.
Yeah. And obviously Yoshi's Island.
Oh yeah.
You know, Shy Guys, the enemy palette and stuff like that. Like, just the enemy designs in this are just really fun and good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great game. And so in this game, you have multiple characters for the first time in a Mario game. Mm-hmm. Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Princess Toadstool. You go on a mission through Dreamland called Subcon in order to rescue some fairies that are captured by Wart, who is an evil frog king.
Is this a neighborhood of the Dreamlands, Gary?
It feels that you go down steps.
Yep.
To get there, like, it's very Dreamlands, actually. Yeah. I was thinking about that. And then, like, Bokrug, you know, could be Wart. So it's got a lot of, like, Lovecraft mythology to it. The Shy Guys, like, you know, once you lift up that mask, it's just a swirling mass of, you know, fingers made of you know, darkened skin and stuff. Like, it is the most Lovecraftian Mario game by a lot.
Of course. Mask. No mask. No mask.
Yeah, exactly. Just, yeah, exactly. The king in red. Little kings in red. Yeah. And then, you know, and then obviously the Phantos. You know, like, this is definitely the most Lovecraftian Mario game.
And we're not just kind of pulling that from nowhere just because we're us. It's yeah. there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that character selection is a pretty big difference right away. And that introduces a couple of things. You know, it's the first time you were able to do this outside of the Lost Levels, which we'll talk about. You can play as Luigi there, and you can play as Luigi in the original Super Mario Brothers. But this is where we start seeing kind of their ability palettes start to mix up. So each character has these different attributes, from jump style to their speed, like running speed, to their kind of lifting animation. And it kind of makes a difference which one you pick.
It makes a lot of big difference.
Yeah.
So
it's never the case where, like, only Luigi can beat this level or only Toadstool can. But it does kind of make certain things easier for you.
And there are things that only one of them can get to.
Yes.
There are, like, shortcuts in different parts of the level. So going through, Mario is the well-rounded Mario character. He jumps the furthest. The other kind of hidden stat, but other thing to consider is how much they slow down when they're holding something.
Mm-hmm.
And how much their jump is impacted. So isn't as impacted a goodly amount, but he's kind of like your standard guy, and he feels a lot like Mario.
Yes.
You know, not so much like Mario 2 Mario, but like he's a little bit tighter than that, but he feels like Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Luigi is the character who I don't play as in any video games. And I think that he controls bad. He has this weird, slow, fluttery jump,
mm-hmm.
and he has less friction on the ground. But his jump is very vertical. And it's hugely impacted by holding things.
Yes.
Holding something makes him jump like Mario's base jump or less.
Right.
Like, it's very garbagey.
Yeah. Toadstool is a little bit OP because mm-hmm. she can float briefly. Yep. I don't know how her carry stats are affected, though.
She's like second worst.
Okay.
Like, she's not great.
Yeah.
She's generally not super good at the rest of the things as well. She doesn't lift things quickly. And floating is, in other games that have this, what this does is make precision platforming a lot easier.
Yes.
It's like an assist mode for landing on things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, what it does is it, instead of before you make the jump, having to calculate all of your vectors and how much what input you're going to put in, you get to make your jump and then reduce all of that to one input, which is removing your finger from the jump.
Yes.
Upon you seeing something. So it changes precision platforming into this kind of reflex game as opposed to this little, you know, micro physics calculation you're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you jump. So it makes a really, really big difference in simplifying landing on things.
Yeah. And finally, Toad himself, he can't jump very high. However, he does have the quickest lift. And also, I think that his jump is the least impacted by carrying stuff.
It's not impacted at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And he can move super quick.
They all actually have the same run speed when they're not holding anything.
Mm-hmm.
He can, but his run is barely impacted when he's holding something.
Yeah, yeah. So even though he makes platforming more difficult, he does end up being like a choice for speedrunners.
Yeah, because you do run a little bit faster when you're holding something.
Right.
In the game. So as far as like new stuff that's introduced, let's get through it.
Let's do it.
One of the things is a super jump, where if you crouch, you'll start glowing. It's almost like a shine spark mm-hmm. kind of thing, because you can carry that with you a little bit. And then you will jump super high. With that, and if you do that on a Luigi, you can traverse a section. You can either, you know, change platforms, get up to hidden areas that you're not really supposed to get to, or sequence mm-hmm. break,
yep.
Or get pretty far,
yeah,
past some things.
Yes, or you can break your neck by jumping into a ceiling, and then you enter the rehab minigame.
The true subcon, the subcon of reality, subcon from Girl Interrupted. I don't know why I pulled that movie out.
I have no idea.
Actually know what that's about, and I don't mean to make light of whatever that movie is about. The subcon from Million Dollar Baby, That feels safer.
Yeah, there we go.
that feels very safe to me. I don't know why.
She knows how to fight. It's fine.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, this is the first game where Mario can pick things up. The other characters pick things up too. In Mario 1, he could only kick Koopa shells, and carrying things will become kind of a Mario staple.
Yeah, yeah.
More so here than later.
Yeah, specifically Koopa shells, but it's kind of different mechanics. Like in it, what this does is it replaces jumping on enemies to hurt them.
Yes.
Now enemies, you can land on them and ride on them and then pick them up. So it's kind of instead of Mario's actual stomp.
Yes.
Lifting up Koopa shells, the way that you do that in Mario 3 and onwards, never felt like an extension of this to me.
Yeah.
This is a much more, this is an overhead lift. It is slower and, you know, more about the throw and less about swimming better or just tossing a shell like normal.
Yeah, this has like the entire game is developed around this mechanic. The fact that you can ride on top of enemies and then also pick them up.
Yep. As well as pick up other things.
Yes.
Yeah. So and those other things are tend to be vegetables in the ground that you can pick up and use as a projectile. They're also blocks.
Yeah.
And such. Another really big difference is in Mario 1, it is only, you only scroll to the right. Mm-hmm. Here, the levels are much more free roaming. You can run in both directions. You can go up and down. There are multiple levels that loop around. When you go to the right, you'll come out the left. and some levels have multiple paths through them.
Yes.
So you can either, you can literally just nonlinear. You can take different ways to get through the level.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or just get a shortcut. Like very early on, there's a shortcut that just takes you the back way to the boss.
Yep.
Yeah.
Also, a significant amount more verticality.
Yeah.
By which we mean any, really. Right. Because Mario 1 did not have that. And even Mario 3 doesn't have very much of it. This level is, you know, we'll talk about the origins of this. The prototype this was made was for a game that was predominantly vertical.
Yes.
Going back to that old Kid Icarus well and seeing if that that had any juice left in it.
Yes. So they modify the health system for this. They actually replace it with hearts. When you're on your last heart, you'll get tiny, kind of carrying over that difference between Mario and Super Mario. The idea that there is a super toadstool is pretty good, I think. Mm-hmm. But you can raise your health cap by kind of doing these little hunts with special doors to subspace to find mushrooms.
It's worth noting they're only hearts in the remade versions. They're little diamonds otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
That you have. So there, we'll talk about the different remakes of this, but before anybody picks up a pitchfork, there are diamonds in the original release and then turn into hearts later.
Yes, yes. But the pickups that you get, like the little floaty things are always hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So you can have multiple health. You can increase your max health up to 4 as opposed to 2. It's not Doki Doki fact. It's like Doki Doki criticism when someone points out that mushrooms are a health system in Mario 1.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a power up. Like your verbs don't change very much. You have a little bit more vertical reach, but really it's health.
Yes.
And this, it goes beyond that. So you can grow big and then you can also, you don't get extra big. I wish you just kept getting bigger, but instead, you can just have some extra padding hit points. And the way they handle that, which we'll talk about in the levels, are actually, it's really interesting. So, one, the way you get it is interesting. You find mushrooms in this subspace, which is a subspace of subcon, by dumping these potions on the floor that make these doors to this dark area, this mirror version. There may be a mushroom there. This is both a cool thing and an uncool thing to me.
Yeah, you have to know where the mushrooms are going to show up.
And sometimes there are hints, and sometimes they're just straight up aren't.
Yeah.
And that increases the sense of mystery, which is cool. It decreases that sense of fairness.
Yeah. It's weird. You have to ride this balance between mystery and discoverability.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it just kind of becomes this thing. Once you know it, you know it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can get multiple tries. Like you can see where it is and then go back and do it again. Sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
The other kind of half of this that's very interesting is it means that you rebuild this every single time you start a level.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes this kind of patina of a goal as you go through the level to find these and make this work to make the end boss easier. And it can really vary. Mm-hmm. Like plenty of times when you get to the end of the boss, like maybe you only found one or maybe none.
Mm-hmm.
Of these, it really depends on your experience going through the level.
Yeah. This doesn't just impact your max health, because when you go to the other side, any of the pickups that you could get, the plants that you could pull, actually turn into coins. And these are used in these between stages slot machines to give you your one-ups. There are one-up you know, pickups that you can get, but they're exceedingly rare.
Rare in the early version. And then the compilation All-Stars on the GBA version, which we'll talk about later, they make them very common. Mm-hmm. And you end up like, you get to like level 3 with 40 or 50 lives.
Yes.
I know that from research and watching some Let's Play of it. I have not played that version. It seems like a nightmare. I don't want to listen to them. I think that Toad should have his mouth stitched shut with like the thickest possible thread.
Yeah.
Just to teach him.
Yeah.
And he needs to not talk.
Yeah. Give him that flesh mouth like Neo gets in the Matrix. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. I want him to have that. And then like with the threaten of a flesh nose to come. The other thing that happens in Subicon is that cherries you pick up there also count towards your cherry total. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of, it's kind of interesting. Like you can pick up a cherry in the real world, go to the subspace rather, not Subicon, go to subspace, pick up a cherry. It still counts towards your total. Mm-hmm. Once you collect 5 cherries in a row, you get a Starman and you get invincibility.
Yes.
And the game is actually extremely clever about cherry placement. Mm-hmm. That is like one of the things playing through it this time that I didn't really pick up when I was younger. That I picked up now is just how much intentionality there is behind cherry placement. This area is a real pain in the ass. But actually there's this hard to reach cherry up there. I looked up there, there's no mushroom. Mm-hmm. You know, why would I go up there? It's like, if I go up there and make go out of the way to get that cherry, then I have invincibility for the stretch.
Right.
Or
they will goad you. They will goad you into fucking yourself.
Yeah, like, if I get this cherry, I'll have a star. If I have a star, I can't jump on these fish that are jumping through this waterfall.
Yeah.
So it does some pretty interesting stuff with the upsides and downsides of invincibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a pretty big game. There are 20 stages to it, and they can be pretty, pretty spacious, like we said. You're going to be spending some time in these because this is just generally a slower-paced Mario game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It seems like there are more than that because there are 8 worlds, but each world doesn't have 4 levels.
7 worlds. Yeah.
Or 7 worlds rather. There's 3 in each of the worlds and 2 in the last one.
Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know why that is? Do you know why the last one has two stages?
I don't.
So in the Doki Doki version of this, the world is inside of a book. And in part of the backstory, one of the kids who was fighting over the book accidentally pulled out one of the pages at the very end. Yeah.
I did not know that.
just little stuff. So we should talk about the biographical stuff because the provenance of this game, you know, so picture Galaxy Brain, right? That meme where at the first level, Super Mario Brothers 2 is a Mario game. Second level, Super Mario Brothers 2 was originally Doki Doki Panic. Third level, where it's, you know, all flashing lights and stuff, is Doki Doki Panic was originally a Mario game.
Yeah. Yeah. The story, it went through multiple different things. Mm-hmm. You know, it counts as Mario, even if only the worst kind of prescriptivist would call this not a Mario game.
Right.
Like the fact, even if you want to be that kind of person, then at the very least, the fact that all this stuff has made it into the series means retroactively, it's definitely a Mario game.
Yes.
Even if you want to be, you know, not count how it was originally and just be like, oh, well, the prototyping of it doesn't really count, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So let's push off talking about the Japanese Mario Brothers 2 until later, because I want to spend a little bit more time with that.
Yes.
Let's talk about, so Nintendo had been prototyping a game for Mario. Mm-hmm. Or for Nintendo. They don't, you know, come characters first. Like Nintendo's thing is they do core gameplay.
Right.
And they've been working on this game that was predominantly vertically scrolling and involved lifting objects. Yes. It was not very fun. Miyamoto came in and said like, hey, what if we made this a little bit more traditional? Maybe that'd work if it was side scrolling.
Yeah. The other big thing about it was supposed to be multiplayer where you could pick and play as different characters cooperatively, but all of that stuff added together, A, it wasn't very fun, and B, the Famicom couldn't really handle it.
Yeah, it chugged.
Yeah.
You know, it was before Rescue Rangers, a game about multiplayer lifting.
Yes.
There was a trade show kind of happening, an expo kind of thing called Dream Factory. And they were having that going on, and they approached Nintendo and were like, hey, make a game for this.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
Yeah.
They said, hey, this prototype we have, we can work on that, turn it into this game. And they're like, here, it has to be the mascots for these electronics companies, which are a family of vaguely Arabian Nights themed people.
Yes.
And Nintendo's like, that's cool. Here's our game. Doki Panic.
Here's our game about a magical storybook.
Yes.
Have you fired up a ROM of Doki Doki Panic just to check it out?
Yeah, I've played a little bit of Doki Doki Panic. It's worse.
Yeah. You can't
not
run.
Worst least of, yeah, can't it doesn't yeah, you can't run. It's not worst least of which because you also to beat the game you have to beat it with every character.
Yeah.
Instead of having care like that requires more than a sad yes. That's a huge deal. What a pain in the ass. Like if you had to beat 80 levels of the same identical thing. What is this fucking Bravely Default? Like don't make me just do the same thing over and over and over again for no fucking reason. That's not very Nintendo.
Pretty bad.
You know, that's a real problem. But Nintendo realized, like, you know, so this is probably, you know, that's how they kind of made it. The game already had Koji Kondo on the score.
Mm-hmm. It already had things like coins and starmen and stuff. Yep. Like there was some wink, wink. Yeah. There was some wink, wink, nod kind of references to Mario in this, you know, because obviously it was going, you know, it was a Nintendo platformer. So to backmask this to become what we got as Super Mario Brothers 2 was not necessarily that demanding, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the other side of the pond, or I guess still in Japan, but they had made Super Mario Brothers 2 in Japan, and the way this was marketed literally for super players,
right?
It says on the cart, like, this was meant to be in a very like PC way to me, like an expansion.
Yes.
To it, like the expansion to StarCraft.
Yeah.
You know, that's extremely difficult.
It was like, hey, have you already beaten Super Mario Brothers? Was the hardest stuff in that not necessarily enough for you? Are you looking for something that's going to be a little bit meatier, something that's going to kind of test you? Well, have we got something for you, Super Mario Brothers 2?
Yep. Known in the States as the Lost Levels.
Right. When we got it on the Super Mario All-Stars track.
Yep. And this is very similar to Mario 1, kind of different graphics and stuff. It's worth a look, even if you've been scared off by the reputation.
Right.
This is what introduced Mario or Luigi having different jump physics. Mm-hmm. Luigi being a different character. This is the first appearance of it. It's also full of weird secrets.
Yeah.
In it. So it is full of like, it's like a game between you and the developers for them to trick and kind of trap you in a way that feels a little bit, kaiju or not kaiju. What am I thinking of?
Like Kaizo, I think Kaizo of trap.
Kaizo. Yeah. Yeah. Not a kaiju trap. Right. Bowser doesn't become that until like way later in the right. series when it just happens at the end of every fucking new Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah.
And why are all of those chases? I am sick of it. but yeah, it becomes a Kaizo kind of game where there are things intentionally to troll you. And I could see, you know, so when this was brought to the States, Howard Phillips, the Nintendo America guy, was like, no, you know,
it's not, this isn't going to work.
Yeah. Like, it's not going to work. By the time it gets here, it will look really primitive because it looks just like Super Mario Brothers 1. And it is just too difficult. And we, you know, we put out extremely difficult games, but this is not a fun type of difficult.
Yeah, this is too much.
So that's why they eventually, you know, they're like, okay, well, we got this Doki Doki, Dream Factory Doki Doki Panic over here. It's pretty Mario-like. It's not going to take much of a coat of paint to make this an actual Mario game.
Right.
And send it on over to you.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a champion of Lost Levels. I think Lost Levels are fun. And I think that Lost Levels are really ahead of their time.
Yes. For me, it's necessary to have save states. Like I tried firing it up on the 3DS because you can actually get the original non-All-Stars graphics version on the 3DS. That works a little bit, but like the save states are a little bit clumsy there. So playing this on an emulator, I think, is the way to do it. I think it's fun as well because it really shows that the people who made it understand the way people play their games and are using your expertise against you.
Yeah. In a way that's kind of fun. Like generally I don't always, me and Will get into kind of disagreements about, Will from Everything to Guppy and my good friend, we'll get into disagreements about like how much we like being trolled by games. And typically he likes it a lot more than I do. And replaying Lost Levels made me realize I do like it. I just don't want the time investment to be very much.
Yeah.
You don't want to be able to iterate rapidly. And that's what, with save states, especially Lost Levels allows you to, it's like, oh, I tried to make this jump. I couldn't do it. Haha. I can appreciate, you know, that feeling and then immediately try again and get around it.
Yeah, it makes me appreciate what goes into making one of these levels and how the fine differences that may not look significant when you're first getting into a Mario game, what a big difference those actually make.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of jump length and jump arc and things like that. The only complaint that I have about the lost levels is eventually it becomes necessary to find hidden blocks to proceed.
Yeah. Which was the style at the time, from Solomon's Key bullshit.
Yeah. It's just bad. It's not something that the original Mario ever really did. It's not something they generally do in the series. And to see them go to that well, that feels like dirty pool to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It's something they would give up.
Yeah.
You know, it's also very early.
Yeah.
Like, it is dirty pool, but they also kind of realized, we shouldn't do that. Like, and when I call Lost Levels ahead of its time, like, obviously things like I Want to Be the Guy are watchwords, but also, like, and some people really have a problem with this. I personally do not. This is what a lot of what Mario Maker culture turned into.
Yes.
Like, I remember watching, and this is not a subtweet of those dudes, but I listened to Retronauts.
Mm-hmm.
I know those guys. And when Mario Maker came out, they were really excited about it. But Bob and Jeremy both tried really hard to make their own version of a 1-1. Like, and they were like, why aren't there more people making 1-1s? Like, their own version of that.
Yeah.
And what the community did instead was make a bunch of challenge levels.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very frustrated by that. And I think came away from the experience feeling more negative about it.
Yeah.
That, like, and I just didn't have that experience. I was just like, no, this is great. Like, you know, it's fun to kind of beat your head against these things with unlimited tries, because if you get it, it does feel good. But also it creates this whole culture where it's extremely fun to watch people online do these just in, like, absolutely push what you can do with this engine.
I mean, just getting down to, like, the way that music, you know, the music blocks, the way that those work when you're holding different stuff, and the way those interact with doors. My favorite part of that saga was just this rivalry that popped up between Dan Reichert and Griffin McElroy, where they would just make levels to torture each other.
Yep. And there's such a little genius thing. Like, I love Mario Maker. And, like, one of the genius things, I love that you had to beat the level to upload it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy, there's like a waypoint story where there's a guy who spent 2,500 hours trying to beat his own Mario Maker level. And, like, he knows it's possible.
Right.
And then once he gets that, that will become this, like, holy grail for this culture that, like, I am not part of, but I think is super fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to download somebody's 1-1.
No.
Like, I feel like I already know 1-1s. Like, I love 1-1s. 1-1s are great.
Yeah.
I just, and for people who don't know what I mean, like, stage 1. Like,
yeah. You
know, Mario 1-1, there's been, again, that's like Doki Doki Games criticism about how good 1-1 in Mario 1 is.
Yeah.
It teaches you a lot, and it's really elegant and awesome. And from a game design perspective, making a version of that is really cool, but making it in the same engine, like, you're going to end up using a lot of the same tricks, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, play with the toys. You know, like, my favorite Mario Maker levels, you know, are not, you know, I love those challenge ones. I also love ones that just explore an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've played ones where it is a very challenging level where the goal is not to get the mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't get through the end if you get the mushroom, and they're just mushrooms.
Yeah.
You have to avoid them. And that's just, like, really clever subversion of how you usually think about power-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. So, I think that just, and not saying that, like, without Mario 2, we wouldn't have Mario Maker, because they don't have that kind of direct lineage. I'm saying Mario Maker maybe wouldn't be what it is without some of that Mario 2, like, and by Mario 2, I mean Lost Levels.
Yeah.
Kind of spirit to it.
Yeah. And I mean, the link between those things is ROM hacks.
Yes.
You know, that already went to great lengths to explore those different things. Obviously, any of these things are going to be hit and miss. There's a, there's a throttle that you have to ride. You know, between, like, what is fair and unfair. I think the big difference between ROM hack stuff and Mario Maker is that your requirement that you beat your level, right?
Yeah, that you beat it, and also just the ease of use, like the interface and everything. Yeah. Like, I'm not digging around in a ROM thing and I'm just gonna get Super KKK Brothers,
yeah,
you know, downloaded onto my computer, as opposed to, you know, something that you know, was actually crafted to, you know, somebody playing in good faith.
Yes.
Like, making in good faith.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to bring that to the United States, so they reskinned Doki Doki Panic. It did not take much. There are some important differences. As we mentioned, not having to beat the game with all the characters is a big one. Not being able to run, or, you know, being able to run is a big one. There's also some other just kind of, like, minor differences.
Yeah. Differences that are, like, I mean, to my eyes, like, Famicom Disk System games just look different because of the color palette and things. The music sounds different. I don't know that it sounds worse, but it, because it's different, I prefer the one I grew up with.
Yeah,
honestly, just kind of stuff like that. We need to talk about that music. I love the music in this game, Gary.
Yeah, it's really good.
It is so good. I love that Koji Kondo just gets into a genre of music and says, I don't know, I like ragtime. Why don't we just do that? And then he does it.
Yeah. It's lots of ragtime.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like about it is I feel like the title screen music is really obnoxious. The beginning of it is not that. It's that weird waltz. Like, I just think it's really trebly.
Yeah.
And just like very obnoxious. But once you actually, I think you're doing the character select music.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Title screen is one of my least favorite title screens, but the rest of the music is good.
Yes. Yeah. So they reskin some stuff. They put in some Mario music. Like when you go to the subspace, that is just a different version of the Mario theme. There's just cool little nods to that. Kind of a result, though, is the fact that a lot of the iconography that we associate with Mario.
A result
of the backmasking. Yeah.
This being shunted into the Marioverse.
Yeah. The result of that particular move is that a lot of the stuff that we associate with Mario actually began in something that was not necessarily a Mario creation, right? So Shy Guys, Ba-bombs, this is where they make their first appearance, and those are big deals.
Especially Ba-bombs. Ba-bombs are huge, and Ba-bombs went right over into Mario 3.
Yes.
You know, so they it was a fast follow.
except in Mario 3, they're more mechanical. Here, they're just spherical men with burly arms.
Yeah, and they blow up immediately.
Right.
So yeah, they're Bowery Toughs.
Yeah. I love the visual design of this game. I have a Phantom mask up on my wall. Mm-hmm. And Shy Guys are just my favorite Mario thing in general.
If you're not a bloodless cuck, you'll put your key holder under that.
Oh, I have. Obviously I do.
Okay, good.
Come on. There's a picture of that. When I first got my Phantom mask, I put a key hook right under it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. Please.
Good. Just making sure. So all that stuff, and those are some of my favorite Mario elements.
Yes.
Like, when I say R, I mean specifically you and me love those things.
Yeah.
Like, those are just, you know, when we did Yoshi's Island, like the Shy Guys on stilts and stuff like that. Like, Shy Guys are just such a brilliant design.
Mm-hmm.
And Birdo is great.
Yep.
This is where Birdo came through and is kind of like a second tier mascot for the game. Like, some of the enemies from this don't show up. You know, like those little birds with masks, or the little ninja guys.
Oh, those guys don't really. Ninjas are around. Ninjas are
around.
They're primarily a thing in the RPGs. Like, a lot of these would become things in the RPGs.
Yeah, because you just need to fill out your roster of things to grind.
Pokies would be.
Oh,
a thing.
Pokies. Yeah. Yeah, Pokies are a big deal, and they appear here. So a lot of the stuff you love from Mario first appeared here.
Mm-hmm.
1996 saw this event called BS Super Mario USA Power Challenge. Which was a Satellaview thing. There's Satellaview emulation for people. This is a concept that people are going to forget about and will not make sense to anyone.
Within
our lifetime. Like, no one will understand this. No one born from this point onward will ever understand Satellaview, I feel like.
Right.
It was a way to use telephone modems to like beam games into your house. Like, you downloaded them through a modem, and then they would broadcast them.
Yeah.
To you, so you could play them. And the whole thing with this was it had a narration.
Yeah.
It was presented in chapters, like kind of like a radio drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would play, but it was a slightly different version of it as kind of like an expansion.
Yeah. So, like, you started out just playing as Mario and you unlock the other characters by completing story elements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not something that I'm ever going to probably pursue, but it's neat that you can actually make it happen.
Yeah.
Like, you can emulate all this Satellaview stuff. It doesn't have the exact same effect, obviously, but, you know, it's not downloading in advance to play appointment gaming.
Yes.
But
yeah,
also Sega Channel.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. The closest thing we got here was Sega Channel, but even that I don't think had like just kind of like broadcast drama elements like this one does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, who look to your left, look to your right. Not very many of those people know what Sega Channel is either.
Right.
You know, so like it was not popular.
Right. Yeah. So this game, Super Mario Brothers 2, Super Mario Brothers USA, has gotten two direct remakes. One as part of Super Mario All-Stars, kind of a collection of Super Mario 1, 2, and 3, sometimes World, depending on how you got that game, and then also the lost levels. For that, they took they kind of just passed over everything with a different kind of graphical style to make them all look pretty similar. I think it's like a lateral move. There's a lot of charm in the original kind of like low texture, low color versions of this of these visuals.
Specifically the levels to me.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, I guess that's a generality, so we can talk about it here rather than in the individual levels, but the levels in Mario 2, whenever you're not on like a desert, if you're underground or in the sky or whatever, are very abstract. They like seem like Chip's Challenge levels or something to me. Like you can see the tiles that they're made with.
Yeah.
There's parts where it's like literally just like, oh, like this is just someone placed like platform.jpg here. And you're standing on it,
yep.
You know, and that loses a little bit in the more naturalistic All-Stars version. Like it doesn't feel quite as weird to me.
Yeah. So like the brick castles turn into like Lego shit when you move up to the SNES.
Yeah. So it's still a good version of it. And it's also just got a lot of people to play this game because similar to, you know, that kind of compilation was kind of what we had before Virtual Console and mini console things, you know. So for people with Super Nintendo who maybe missed the Nintendo generation, here's a bunch. You love Super Mario World. Here's a bunch of other Mario games that look the same, play a little bit differently, but maybe you'll like those as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. The other one that was put out was Super Mario Advance, starting kind of some weird like Rambo titling. So Super Mario Advance is Super Mario Brothers 2. Super Mario Advance 2 is Yoshi's Island. And then Super Mario Advance 3, I think, is Super Mario 3.
It's Mario World. But yeah, it's Mario 3.
Yeah.
I don't remember. They're not great ports. Like the screen dimensions are a little worse on these.
Yeah.
And then they just add a lot of flourish to them and voice. And the voice is constant. I never played this one, but I watched it today. And whenever you hit an enemy, whenever you pick something up, whenever you get a heart, like every time you get a heart, and instead of, and they make some pretty significant gameplay changes as well. So like instead of here, I think it's every 10 enemies. It is every 10 enemies in Mario 2 that you kill, you get a heart. That's the reason to kill enemies instead of just bypassing them.
Yeah.
In Super Mario Advance, it happens every enemy you kill. Every time you pick up a heart, you say thank you, which is like polite.
Oh, yeah.
In a way, but also shut the fuck up, Toad. I'm like, I need you. I'm gonna saute you.
Yep.
Like, I need you to be quiet. Oof, like you do not get to talk, friend.
You gonna get caramelized.
Yeah,
is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is. It's very unfortunate. It looks cooler. There's some like weird little tricks and stuff it does. There are giant enemies, which I'm always appreciative of.
Yes.
Like picking up giant enemies is fun. But it is not, it's not the version that I would choose to play, I think.
No. The later entries in Super Mario Advance, like the one that is a remake of Super Mario Brothers 3, uses the e-card reader in kind of an interesting way to like get challenge levels. Like they would release just level packs as literal packs of cards. That is, kind of a neat little thing that the Game Boy Advance did. However, this one right here, Super Mario Advance, it was very obviously them looking at, okay, what are the capabilities of the Game Boy Advance as regards like sound and voice synthesis? And said, okay, Mario Brothers 2 is a likely candidate. Let's just kind of put this out almost like as something to A, show what it could do, but B, fill out the launch.
It was a weird choice. Because
yep.
Super Mario Bros. 2 has always been this, it's like not the most popular Mario game. Like, you know, putting Mario 1 on there in an enhanced version, they'd done that with the Game Boy Color, but that really, really excellent version of Mario 1 for the Game Boy Color. That includes the lost levels as well, actually.
Yeah.
And Mario 3 is kind of the prestige Mario game.
Yeah.
Mario World had just come out, or it had come out like a system before, essentially. Like, so it you know, I guess it made Mario 3 would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the fact that they chose Mario 2, like for me, and I can't speak for anybody else, for me actually colored my opinion of the GBA at launch. It took a while for me to get a Game Boy Advance that ended up becoming one of my favorite systems, but that choice made it seem like this was like the system was going to be lesser than or something. Cause by that point I hadn't really come around to Super Mario Brothers 2 being, you know, secret past, right?
I remember even reading reviews that this was like a misguided discussion or decision. opportunity that. So that version, I had a vague thought about like picking those up, next time we're at a convention, just because they are a little bit different. And I love an excuse to get out my GBA.
Yes.
But I have not done so. And I imagine since they're Nintendo, they're probably still kind of spendy.
Yeah.
So, let's actually get into it.
Let's do it.
So the game begins with this text crawl that explains that story, as you mentioned. Mario had a dream where he opened a door in a cave and heard voices screaming for help.
Yep.
And then
he wakes up.
Yep. He walked to the cave and went down the 77 steps of light slumber and the 777 steps of deep slumber and talked to the two guardians and then went into the dreamlands. This is, you get a character select here. A difference between the original version and the All-Stars version is, in the All-Stars version, you can change characters every death.
Mm-hmm.
In the original version, you do it every set of lives.
Yes.
So that's an ease of use thing that makes the All-Star, point for All-Stars.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of picking your character. Picking Mario makes a lot of sense here because you don't know what else to do, and he's really well suited to this first set of levels.
Yes. I love this 1-1. We're going to dine on 1-1 here a little bit more than we will for some of the other levels, just because this is incredibly well designed to illustrate what this game is about right from the start. Because when you enter this world, you come out a door that's up in the middle of nowhere. It's up in the sky. So you start by falling and actually scrolling vertically, which again is something that didn't happen in Super Mario Brothers 1.
Well, it's the same. It's an interesting way to show that you have to do that. So, like, if you look at this, makes an interesting triad with Super Mario Brothers 1 and Metroid 1.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Metroid or Super Mario Brothers 1, you try to go left, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
It just stops you. So you have to go right. And there's stuff that way. There's nothing behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Metroid, you go to the right, you run to a barrier, and then you're like, well, what else direction are you going to go? Left.
Mm-hmm.
You go left, and then you get an item that allows you to go right and teaches, like, oh, okay, like, items are going to dictate which directions I can move and what barriers I can get through.
Mm-hmm.
Here, to illustrate vertical scrolling, if they'd done the opposite of this, if they just started you at the bottom of the hill and you had to go up to get to a door at the top of the hill, it just like wouldn't work.
Right.
Like some of your players would figure it out. But the fact also when you're falling, you don't have very much friction. So hitting gently left or right will send you to the edge of the screen where you wrap.
Yeah.
And if you were at the bottom of the hill, you would just kind of wrap around and be like, well, what the hell? I expected the screen to scroll over to the next zone, and it didn't.
Yeah.
So making it out of your hands initially just teaches you a lot without doing very much.
Mm-hmm. Before you even press a button.
Yep.
Yeah. So it also introduced the Shy Guys. So you're falling down kind of this series of cascading plateaus almost. You get a Shy Guy. And there's a little plant here. If you are playing like a Mario character, you will try and jump on it and you will see, oh, I'm riding him around. And then that can teach you to pick him up and like maybe throw him at the Shy Guy below you. And then you might think, okay, I can pick him up. What's this little waving leaf down here? Well, okay, I can pick that up and now I've got a radish to throw.
Mm-hmm. And you throw it and nothing happens. You don't eat it, you don't do anything like that. Like, this is something where it benefits from the lack of buttons on a Nintendo controller as well.
Yes.
Because A is jump. You just don't have very many things to try. Like when you're riding on that Shy Guy, it's not intuitive that you can pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
But you hit start. That freezes time. It's your time freeze, but unfortunately it works on you as well as the enemies. So it's a useless superpower. You hit select, nothing happens. So you just know, like, what's this B button do? And that allows you to figure out this core mechanic here. Really, really neat. And you can throw things into things, which you have to kind of intuit as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't teach you that, but once you get into screen 2, you know how to throw plants. You pick up a plant. The way that the Shy Guys are spaced in this first one, it will make a plant bounce on two Shy Guys, which is never a strategy in this game, but it's always satisfying when it happens.
Yes.
And it is crafted to happen the first time you go down here and throw one of these vegetables.
Yeah. It is a satisfying little accident.
Mm-hmm. Do that. And you're introduced to the first guy, these tweeters, who are more unpredictable. They do two short hops and then a bigger hop as they move around. So they're harder to get on top of. They're a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, okay, some enemies are going to actually also jump as well. Everything we've seen so far has been glued to the ground, but this guy jumps.
Yes.
A little bit trickier.
Yeah. You also get vines here, which you can climb up and down. And it gets you to your first set of crops, your first row of these leaves. And the first one that you can pick up, you know, if you're going down the line, is your door potion. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, so if you try and throw this, you'll see that you just kind of place it down in front of you. If you do that immediately, this deploys you into an area that is just asymmetrical enough to communicate that these door areas are mirrored. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be next to a bunch of other crops. So you can see, okay, I pick up these shadow ones and I get these, I get the coins. And then also there's a mushroom here.
Yep. And you know, the mushroom is good. You maybe don't know to pick it up. Like you try to run into it, but if you jump on it, if you run into it, nothing happens. You jump on it. Then again, you don't have very many verbs. Mm-hmm. So you pick it up and you gain a life. So you're like, okay, that's how that works. And you get those crops. Coins aren't immediately, you know, obvious what they do, but we just know coins are good.
Yes.
Because the semiotics of the sound and stuff that happens.
Yes. A little bit further down out of the subspace, you find a bunch of corralled enemies. Between these posts, and there's a POW block in the middle. You recognize the POW block from Mario Brothers, and you you know, you pick that up and you throw it.
Quite, quite obvious, you know. Most likely, you don't.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause not many people played that, but you know, you just know my verbs are pick up and throw.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna try and see what this does. It works different. If you recognize this from Mario Brothers, you're actually worse off.
Yeah.
Because it operates in a different way.
Yes.
Those ones worked by hitting them from below, and they operate three times. These are just an item you can throw.
Yes. But this will clear an enemy. They will clear a screen of enemies.
And there's a good chance at the time when you do this is if you fought enemies before you went into subspace that you've now hit 10 enemies and you get a heart.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching you like, oh, like killing enemies is not just getting them out of my way. I also will sometimes get power ups. For a long time when I was younger, I thought that was random.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it happened after I killed enemies, but I thought it was a property of the enemy, not how many enemies I'd killed.
Right.
But you just know that hearts can result from enemies.
Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty grisly fact.
Oh yeah, you rip out their turtle treasures and like devour them while they're still beating.
Yes. And floating up. So I assume you're stopping their soul from reaching heaven.
It looks like the hearts that float up in Popeye. I mean, if you know that weird arcade Nintendo game.
Yeah. Beyond this, we get a waterfall. This is an easy section where you have these logs that are kind of cascading down. A little bit out of phase with each other. Much later they're gonna do a lot of difficult things with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And there is a this kind of slip path here. There's a door that you can go into to an indoor area.
Yeah. Before you go in there, you can see the like up on a platform above that there's just a place where you can go, and there's a dead end beyond this.
Plants and enemies up there. There is this bombing thing. So you have to use your super jump to get you through here. I think that the game doesn't communicate your super jump well.
No.
It doesn't do anything to teach you how to do that other than just like, hey, read the manual.
Yes.
The way to do that would have been to like maybe have something go over your head that caused you to duck for an extended period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. But as is, like, you just kind of have to know.
Yeah. And you can also you can make that jump with a run if you're playing as Mario, or if you're playing as Luigi, you can get up there.
Yeah, but not as Toad.
Right.
And this introduces this bomb timing. Every time you pull something out, it's been a potion or a plant. You pull this out and it's a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, shit, bombs. And it starts flashing. And this is this kind of like, not tricky, but pretty tricky for a 1-1 timing puzzle to drop the bomb, you know, cook the grenade.
Yes.
Long enough for it to blow up and smash these blocks.
Yeah, it has to blow up in midair to create a passageway forward.
Yeah.
This is the optional kind of secret way to get to skip a large portion of the level. If you just head off to the right, you'll get to a section where you are climbing up vines, and these have little buddies named hoopsters on them, little ladybugs.
Yeah.
That will, you know, you have to jump between the vines to avoid them. If you take the left, though, that it gets you past that.
Yep. So again, it allows you little skips if you do something tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are, at the end of this, we're introduced to, also if you take, either of those areas, you do get a huge area full of crops, where the mushroom, if I recall, is not actually near the crops. So I think this is the first, maybe that's in 1-2, but there's an area where you get your first, like, oh, it can be useful to go into subspace and not get a mushroom.
Yes.
Like, you don't know what they do yet, but, you know, sometimes it is actually literally a balance between getting a mushroom or getting 10 coins.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe those 10 coins are more useful.
Yes.
So you're introduced to a kind of our standard mini boss, and we'll fight over and over again, Birdo.
Yes. Birdo, the being without sex that is the vessel for the orb that opens the bird that bridges the gap between space and time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. he spits out, much like Yoshi, like his mouth and his reproductive zone, or her there, you know, reproductive zone are linked in a way that is disturbing.
Right.
Birdo tries to dash its young against the rocks in order to spite you.
You're right.
And you have to throw those eggs back in Birdo's face and say, raise this. Teach it a trade.
Yeah. And you have to jump on these things. They fly out straight. And you have to jump on it, pick it up, and then throw it in.
There's a rhythm to Birdo fights, which are shooting eggs in sets of three. So depending on how floaty and slow your jump is, getting onto the egg and lifting it quickly is it necessary?
Yes.
So like as Peach, where it's very easy to land on the egg, you pick up so slowly that you can be hit by the next egg while you're mid animation. Whereas with Mario or Toad, you'll pick up the egg very quickly and be on the ground before the next egg comes.
Yes.
So you have to learn that rhythm of Birdo shooting eggs and jump on that third one. So you have a little bit of a breather.
Yeah. You're going to fight Birdo a lot. There are different kinds of Birdos that you're going to get to. The primary way that they differentiate these and make it so it's not just kind of the same fight over and over again is to give you, is to vary up the arena that you fight them in.
Yeah. And what the Birdo does as well.
Yeah.
Like the Birdos that shoot fireballs are significantly different. The Birdo also talks to you in the GBA version, which is a bummer.
Yep. Please don't talk.
Says things like, you know, this is as far as you go, or I'll get you next time, or whatever. And it's like, you don't, just because you can talk doesn't mean you have to.
Right. It is better to be silent and thought a fool than to open your mouth and confirm it. Birdo.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. So that's the most detail we're going to go to on any of these levels. But it is a very successful 1-1 in terms of demonstrating the basics of what you're going to do.
And not all the levels are that good.
Right.
As far as, you know, there are some things that are just kind of some straight up, you know, oh, this level is just albatrosses and bombs. Like, fuck me, I guess. Like, you know, there are levels that are like that, that do kind of more standard stuff, but it does a really good job of teaching you. But it does, like a lot of video games, it, some of that falls down when it's trying to be, when it starts really needing to wheel out challenge.
Yeah.
It gets worse at expressing, you know, teaching you to play it. But this is, you know, not quite, you know, 1-1 Mario perfect. Again, like, I think that it needs to do something to teach you how to super jump.
Yeah.
And that's tricky given this verb set. But it is pretty elegant.
Yes.
So.
Yep. Into it. Yep. 1-2, kind of introduces another mechanic that isn't used very much, but it is still impressive to put early on in the game, which is, it introduces Pidget, which is kind of like a little, bird chick that flies around on a magic carpet that you can pick him up. You can hijack this carpet, Gary.
Yeah. And it lasts for a little while and then it flashes before it disappears.
Yes.
So you have just enough time. As you're doing this, you're going through these like Jeff Bezos, like little dive bombing bee shy guys.
Yeah. They're flying shy guys that have pitchforks.
Yeah. Look like cute little devils. Look like Kid Icarus style enemies to me a little bit.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they're kind of dive bombing. You have to dodge them and get to the end by the time your carpet flickers. You can start moving down, you know, from Mario that you can go down pipes. You can start going down these pots down there into these weird little like it seems like you're shrinking down.
Yeah.
Like you're in a pot shaped level, which I really love.
Yep. I love the platforms almost always look like a face as well. And this is where you're introduced to the key system and Phantos. So if you run past this, the stage will dead end into a locked door. Exploring a little bit further gets you down and shows, okay, here's a key, but there are these scary masks around. It almost doesn't bear speaking out loud because, you know, it's just something.
Well, once you say it, then that's how Phanto finds out about you in the real world.
Yes. And then that's how he can locate you. I mean, so my experience is by no means unique, but Phanto terrified me when I was a kid. Just the fact that he could chase you between screens, and was so unrelenting while you carried. After you picked up his sacred key. And the way he moves is like super fluid and quick in a way that just I did not expect from a Mario game. The way that he just kind of flies between, he can fly through platforms and he will just kind of make these quick turns to come at you and home in on you.
Well, he,
Go ahead.
Like he does get kind of quick turns, but he also has that momentum to him.
Yes.
Like it's more like I would like, cause it's not like quick turns to me. It sounds like he's like, does like 90 degree turns or something.
No, no.
He doesn't. He makes swooping motions.
Yes.
He swoops after you. And he moves through everything because he's essentially like a sticker on top of the screen.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't interact with any geography. He's just this hazard that is on top of everything else. Like I never got scared of Phanto, but I always loved Phanto.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is such a cool feeling.
Yeah.
When you have him, and it's actually, for as like kind of infamous as this guy is, these sections are not, he's not hard to deal with.
No.
You put down the key and he leaves you alone and then you pick it back up. It's kind of like a weird evolution or like precursor to Booze almost,
mm-hmm.
where something stalks you, relentlessly, like makes a beeline towards you until you do something,
mm-hmm.
and then they forget about you and then you do the thing you need to do again.
Yes.
Working that throttle, it kind of feels like a Boo,
mm-hmm.
to me.
Yeah. There are a couple of things that can mitigate them too. Like the key acts just like any other thing that you can carry, except that after you throw it, it doesn't go away. So you can use that as weapons, to clear enemies out in front of you.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. When I say that I'm scared of Phanto, remember that I played this when I was like 4 years old.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I get it. I mean, but you're not the only person. I mean, yeah, I was more addressing the general thing.
Yeah.
But I also played when I was a little bit older, so,
mm-hmm.
I was immune to fear. All my fears were adult fears.
Right.
Like my fear was that I hadn't started a Roth IRA junior. So you can throw that key, but also because the Nintendo game, if the key goes off screen, it will disappear forever.
Right.
There's no object permanence in Nintendo games. So you have to be careful with that.
Yeah. And the way that they use this later on is, you know, here there's just a very short gap between where you pick up the key and where you have to use it. Later they're going to put more intricate stuff that you have to do while Phanto is chasing you.
Yep.
In between the key and the door.
Yeah. Yep. Once you put in that key in the door, you're introduced to this like brief underground area,
mm-hmm.
With, so Snifts, which are, look like Shy Guys, but they have a inverse mask.
Mm-hmm.
So, a black mask with a kind of white highlights, and they spit out little bullets.
Yes.
Out of their mouth. And these guys are a pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they, it's pretty unpredictable, the rhythm in which they spit out these bullets.
Yes. The other thing that they introduce are these ninjis, which are these little guys, look like stars almost. And they do up and down jumps. They will almost always be put in rows, and they will jump out of phase with each other.
Yep. Yeah, and that's kind of their thing. And they'll chase you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This underground area has introduced something where you have a limited number of bombs, and you have to use them wisely to break through. And if you do it correctly, there is also a door potion here. And you have to blow away the blocks before you use the door potion in order to get a mushroom here. So that's like a tricky little puzzle way to get extra health.
Yeah, it's hard. It's not really a puzzle because you don't have the advanced information. Like once you pick up the potion, you can't put it down without firing it.
Yeah, it is. It is a very particular order in which you have to do things. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, it's not these kind of door potions where it's just trial and error are better because you can still reset this if you go back to the door and come back in.
Yeah, yeah.
Which might be worth it to get that mushroom. But later there will be ones where there's just no way to reset it.
Yeah, yeah.
It just, you either knew in advance where the thing was or you didn't. Like, oh, I got the potion. Oh, I have to use it on the clear on the other side of the map. Fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, then the challenge is carrying it that far, but there's no signaling.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to do. So it's just like you either know or you don't.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. This one's not so bad. Once you get through that, you fight another Birdo. Pretty standard Birdo.
Yes. Taking you to 1-3, which is mostly waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they open up with four cherries in a row, which I think is really canny because, okay, I pick up all of these. There's nothing that arrives. It's only when you get the last one that causes the star to show up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a good way to highlight and underline exactly how many of these you have to look for to get that bonus.
Yeah. Yep, teaches you, which is very cool. Working with these waterfalls and these logs, there are trouters, which are little fish that fly up that are essentially platforms.
Mm-hmm.
They move kind of quickly. You ride on their eyeballs, which seems very painful. And here, they're not necessarily to platform on, even though you can. They're mostly to be in your way.
Yes.
Later, they will be little one-unit platforms that are pretty tricky
mm-hmm.
to work with.
Yeah. You get past that and you get to what is the majority of the level, this indoor castle or factory biome. And if you go down, you'll get to a locked door. What you have to do is you have to go up to the top and get the key. And you do that by climbing up these chains, which are just reskinned vines.
And introduces on some of the platforms are these spark enemies, which kind of they're on loan from the Donkey Kong collection.
Yeah,
I think these are Donkey Kong Jr. enemies that move back and forth around these platforms, making them more dangerous.
Yes, that is that kind of becomes the primary way in which they make platforming difficult in this game.
Yeah, there's a lot of these guys. Yep. And this is the first like little bespoke room that's just for the Fanto and the key at the top, which gives it this ritualistic feel, which I really love.
Love it. I also love that there are more masks. So it is only one of them that wakes up and deploys.
Yeah, the other ones, it's not their shift.
Yeah.
So after you take that all the way to the bottom, you get to your boss. And one of the things that I love about Mario 2, the reason why I love it so much, is the boss fights in this are so much more interesting and creative than the boss fights in Mario 3.
Oh, yeah.
I actually really love all the boss fights in this game.
Yeah.
Birdos, you fight, you know, too many of them. Like, it's just a mini boss. I get it. But the actual boss fights, this one specifically, this one in Triclide, I think are awesome. These are great boss fights.
Yeah.
So let's talk Mauser.
So Mauser, he is a really cool rat. And I know he's real cool because he wears shades. And what he does is he's up on his own little platform and he throws bombs at you.
Just tosses bombs down and you need to give those bombs back to him, of course.
I'm sorry, sir. You dropped this.
Yes, it is back at you. Return to sender. And the way that you what this kind of teaches you, which is not actually a useful skill and gets subverted with the crab boss, which is my least favorite of the bosses.
Yeah.
And this is claw grip, is that you don't have to necessarily get on top of something to pick something up. You can jump under it and grab it. And that motion is just very satisfying.
Yep.
In this again, like, you can't do it later, which is a bummer.
Yeah,
but here you can do it, and then you have to put them up on the platform with Mauser and have them time right to blow him up.
Yeah, and the trick to that is you're not necessarily looking to throw it. Will, your life will be more difficult if you try and throw it and make it land on the platform in the right time. What you want to do is wait under Mauser, wait for it to start flash. You want to just jump up really quickly and deposit it right next to where he is.
Or if you put it in the back of the platform, he spends a lot more time in the back of the platform.
Yes.
You can usually just safely just place a bomb there. And by the time it goes off, that's probably where Mauser will be. The illustration in the manual of Mauser, he has an amazing sloppy gut. I just love, he's like letting it all hang out in a really big bad way that doesn't come across in the sprite.
Nope.
And I'm very into it.
Yep. And I love his little smile that just says, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, he is here to party and I am here to party with him.
Yes.
Like, the two of us party, like, you know, would I party with Mauser? Yes. Do I want to do it right now? Yes. Yeah. Would I put down my headphones and leave in the middle of this podcast and let you finish it yourself? Yes. If Mauser just, like, you know, bombed open my door and was like, what up? And I'd be like, fuck yes, I'm so sick right now. I feel very much like I have a cold, but I'll drink anything you give me on the presumption that it will make me better or at least feel better. Let's go bomb.
Yeah.
Let's go bomb things. You crazy monster. I love you.
Well, the thing is, you know, like when he's working, he throws these bombs, you know, the spherical bombs. When he's partying, he throws party balls.
Yeah. Pony kegs and stuff. I want to go out with Mauser and get on my big sloppy gut, get a tattoo of him, and then have him get a tattoo of me on his big sloppy gut.
And then the tattoo artist, after he finishes the tattoo of you on him, he goes and amends the tattoo of him to add the tattoo of you onto the tattoo of him that's on you,
and vice versa. And this is how we trap a tattoo artist through it, like a genie. And then at the end, we'll kick the tattoo artist gold bucks to make a tattoo of himself. Just so he doesn't feel left out.
Right.
And the three of us go out partying. The three of us hit the strip clubs. And you know, Mauser's like stuffing bombs and G-strings. And I'm like, no, dude.
Come on.
And I give him a dollar. I teach him about our currency. And then I take him home. And it's like, what do I feed you?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. Like, do you like the same food I do? And he's like, I got some string cheese. And he's like, yeah, fuck yes. Like, that is exactly what I want. I'm a mouse. Give me that string cheese. And I'm like, cool. Let's eat this one like Lady and the Tramp, bro. And then we take the string cheese and we both eat the sides of it. And in the end, we kiss. And then it's like me and Mauser, bam, married. You're at the wedding. You're officiating. Happily ever after. Me and Mauser.
Yep.
Bros forever. Till death do us part. Gotta bing.
So dumb.
No, it'll be beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, just say it's dumb in the way that everything in human life is dumb.
Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, I guess you know sometimes true love can be dumb, but it is. It will also be really great. And like, he looks like a snuggler, man. Like, if you're gonna snuggle with any of these guys,
yeah. No, I'm not gonna snuggle with a fry guy.
No. Fry guy like tries to. Isn't it? Does anyone can say why these two should not be wed? And then Fry Guy fucking sets fire to the church. You know, me and Bowser have to team up to fight him.
Yeah, you know, and Triclide seems, you know, pretty two-faced, which is ironic.
Moving on to 2-1. This is a desert zone.
Yes. A handful of biomes. There are not as many biomes as there are worlds in this. I like the desert stage quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Just because, I don't know, there are things that exist only in video games that I was fascinated with when I was young, primarily conveyor belts and quicksand. And this has the latter in spades.
Yeah, there's lots of quicksand. And there's different kinds of quicksand in this game. Like, this is a gentler quicksand.
Yes. We've got new enemies here. We've got cobrats, which pop out of the sand. And weirdly, they kind of fill in for the piranha plants by popping out of the jars, and shooting stuff at you.
The jar ones do.
Yes.
The regular ones just kind of, they're just taller, shy guys.
Yeah, that's what I meant. The ones that pop out of the jars. That's what I said.
Yeah. 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 Cause yeah, there's just two different kinds of cobrats. Mm-hmm. And these jars, a lot of times you can go down into them. What they give you is a power up that we haven't seen yet. Except for the one we critically need to go down to, and that's turtle shells.
Yes.
You can go down there and get a turtle shell, and they operate like turtle shells do in Mario 1.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll keep going and can hurt multiple enemies, whereas every time you throw a vegetable, both vegetable and combatant die.
Mm-hmm. The turtle shell, just mechanically, I don't know if it's the pace at which it goes, or the way it animates when it is rolling, it looks so out of place in this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
And there's also really no reason for it. Like, it's a worse POW block at best. The GBA version, I think, it's either that or the All-Stars version added, made them bounce off of things and made it so you can actually get one-ups from hitting enough guys with it.
Yeah.
Similar to the old version, but in the original NES version, you couldn't do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
The second portion of this.
And where are the turtles? You pulled that turtle shell out of the ground. That was a grave.
Oh, yeah.
And that sprout was a marker. You know, yep. Like, you've stolen some valor this day. So
the second portion of this involves a lot of digging. You have to get down to the bottom, and you just have to just gotta use some elbow grease. This is where Toad comes in handy. If you want to get through quick, you want to plan your route because you have shy guys who are going to be walking back and forth, and they will follow you down in the gaps that you create.
You don't like that. That's basically, I'm not doing this to be pedantic. I wouldn't say you plan your route. Like, what it does is it means you have to keep like switching sides.
Yeah. You just have to keep moving so that they won't follow you as quickly. Yeah.
It gives you this pursuit mechanic similar to Phantos, but in kind of a different way, just cause they roll downhill.
Yeah.
In the Nintendo version, there's a way to make this unwinnable by systematically digging making it so you can't get out, like digging all the layers. But in the later versions, they give you a little, door to go through that resets everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a cool little thing. You'll end up with like multiple shy guys chasing you. They also place cherries at regular intervals, so you can eventually get those and then just dig straight down or go back up and kill all your pursuers, which is really great.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the digging sections quite a bit. I like what they do with them later. The boss here is a birdo. They make this tricky by having her kind of down in a little pit with, some, you know, bottomless pits around her. So you have to kind of be right up close. And, you know, you don't have the benefit of watching an egg move through the air and timing your jump. You just have to be like right on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Say no more. You have the benefit of an egg. Not a big trick, but a little bit trickier. And these will continue to get weirder. 2-2, you start inside. So it kind of feels a little bit like you're going through one big world, but it will break this multiple times in the game. Here, it feels like it's all one path. And get out eventually into the outdoors, which is more quicksand.
Yes. More quicksand. This is where they introduce Pokies. Pokies are different here. If you primarily have experience with Super Mario World, these are the cacti dudes who are made up of, you know, bunches of spheres. In Super Mario World, you know, they damage you when you jump on them or when you touch them. Here, you can ride them around.
Mm-hmm. And you can dismantle them layer by layer, which I super love.
Yes.
Yeah. And they mostly are just kind of difficult because they're tall. Like, you have to kind of get like a good jump or get at the maximum of your jump to get over them if you're playing as Toad. And this is a good world for Toad because he digs really fast.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So here there's an indoor area where it kind of expects you to power jump while holding bombs. Like, this for me was the introduction to the idea that you can do this while you're carrying something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the door push and that you can get there is pretty lucrative.
Yeah, lots of coins. We didn't really talk about what you do with the coins between levels. We should mention that at the very least. You get a slot machine.
Yeah. And each coin that you pick up gives you a new spin on that. It is a slot machine only insofar as there are multiple reels. It is that kind of slot machine that only appears in video games where you can stop them, where you time the stops.
And as far as I know, it is actually entirely random.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do not... It's possible that there's strategy to this, but I just tap as fast as I can to get through it.
Yeah, because if you have like 10, if you have 10 coins, it takes a while. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yep. After you kind of do this, another digging section, mm-hmm. With more Shy Guys waiting on you, you get to a new articulation on the Birdo.
Yeah.
Where Birdo is up on this kind of narrow vantage point. To get up there, you have to stack these mushroom blocks. We've seen these blocks before,
mm-hmm.
These inedible hard mushrooms, but you have to actually use them to get over to where she's at.
Yes.
And while that's happening, she's hitting bombs against the wall, which will then fall down and can rain and hit you in the head.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty great. And it's also preparing you for the mushroom block content at the end.
Yes, which is plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 2-3 is really pretty short. Well, what you're doing, you're outside. There's a secret that you can get to if you ride the Bezos. Again, those Shy Guys, the little pitchforks, kind of testing to see if you're like, hey, I don't know, I can ride everything else. Can I? Oh, shit, I can fly now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you ride them, you don't have control over them like the magic carpet. You just go where they go.
Yes.
Yeah, you head to that secret room. I think that gives you a mushroom if you do that, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to the right, you get to this pyramid. When you go inside, you have to dig down and get a key with the Fanto and move upwards through the sand.
Yes. Through the Shy Guys that are chasing after you down the path that you dug up for yourself.
Yep.
And this gets you to the final boss of this area. This boss area actually has a little arena in front of it. So there's like a hallway with enemies. And the orb that will open up the bird mouth. I liked your tweet about the bird mouth, actually. If you don't ride the bird, when you pick up the orb, you're a cop.
Yep. Yeah. It's the most fun thing to do.
Yeah.
You jump on the top and go, ding, 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 ding. And lift up. It's very fun.
Yeah. So you get the pal block and you can, you go forward. And this is where you fight Triclyde.
Yeah. Who is a Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little three-headed Hydra, so like a miniature Hydra. And he is essentially just a turret. Mm-hmm. Like, he continually shoots fireballs at you. And the thing I love about this is the way this arena is set up, where you can build a little fort.
Yeah.
Like, you build a tiny shield for you to have this little staging area where you're protected from most of the fireballs, for you to take your mushroom blocks, go up and throw them at him.
Mm-hmm.
I love this, like, building this little, like, rampart-style defenses,
mm-hmm.
in this boss fight. Like, it's just really clever.
Yeah. And you know, it's a viable strategy. You can determine that because even though the fireballs, you know, they have a little bit of variance, they almost always travel down diagonally from mm-hmm. where it's at, and will always pass through that area where you would end up building the wall. It's real good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't mean to delay this, you know, what should be a very breezy episode.
Mm-hmm.
The blurbs in the manual about the bosses.
Oh, yeah.
Mauser, it is a bomber of bad dreams that destroys good dreams. It is proud and doesn't believe that it's just a mouse.
It knows it's more.
Triclyde, he was once an outsider, but now he is one of Wart's helpers since he impressed Wart with his cunning brain and offensive capabilities, which are 3 times normal strength.
Okay. because you have 3 heads. Yeah. Good.
Did Triclyde's resume write that? Like, just anyone... Come on.
I triple productivity whatever job I attempt. Yeah, I would exactly. hope so.
Whatever I spearhead, I yeah. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. So this gets you into World 3, which is the Green Hill biome, you know, from mm-hmm. World 1, except there's a lot more water here.
Yeah. Yep. And the first section is this lengthy kind of waterfall. As you're kind of moving this waterfall, you end up climbing these cloud platforms mm-hmm. there, and kind of showing you the difference between the pink and the blue Shy Guys. Like there exists as a platform hazard here because mm-hmm. they did not walk off ledges, unlike the red ones who will kill themselves at the drop of a hat.
Yes. Yeah. The pink Shy Guys are careful. The red ones are reckless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get to the top, there's a Pidget here. This is where you have to ride it upwards to get to a vine. And it's especially, I mean, it's not really difficult, but it feels harrowing to be so high up and try and nail a jump off of a flashing magic carpet mm-hmm. on this vine. Feels neat.
Yeah. This whole level being predominantly vertical is cool.
Yes.
Once you get up to the top, you get to a section with these panzers, which are these plants that shoot fireballs out of them mm-hmm. that do show up in Mario World as well.
Yes. The trick of them being they'll hit anything above them, but the fireballs will also cascade down. So they are a danger above and below.
Yep. They start putting them in platforms above you eventually. Mm-hmm. They're a pain.
Yes.
Oh. And also a mild pain is the boss, which is our introduction to the Red Birdo, mm-hmm. who kind of randomly will sometimes shoot a fireball, you know, essentially daring you to jump on the egg. And sometimes it is an on-fire egg.
Yes.
No, huevos picante.
Huevos en fuegos.
Huevos en fuegos is what they should have called this guy. Yeah.
Yep. But again, they introduce they add the new kind of Birdo, and it puts you back into a regular kind of arena. Mm-hmm. Good design. 3-2 gives you a very strange sight. It opens up with some Shy Guys riding around a new kind of enemy, these Ostros.
Mm-hmm. Which are only an enemy, like, in name.
Yeah.
Like, they don't really do very much.
They're pretty inert, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. You pick up the Shy Guy and throw them off them, and then you can ride this guy, but why would you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool, but, like, you don't get any advantage from it. And you can pick this guy up and throw them, and it looks weird when you're holding their little tiny head above you, but that's really it.
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The noteworthy thing about this is the door to the boss is right under you. You have to go to the right and loop back.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. And this is the first one with the what are they called? The enemy that shoots the panzer, where mm-hmm. it's above and below. Like it's you deal with it on your platform, but if you don't deal with it, it will rain hell down on you.
It's pretty good.
And you get down to this underground area here once you go back inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then this has some kind of more bomb puzzles again, where you have a limited number of bombs to get through these things, but you can always reset
mm-hmm.
by going through the door.
Yeah.
But you need to use all of your bombs pretty much.
Yes. And in the end, it's kind of strange because you don't actually have to deal with them. They're a little bit sealed up mm-hmm. in a couple of these little shallow pits. A new kind of enemy, Porcupos, which they don't really use that much.
Yeah, they're pretty rare.
Yeah. The difference being this is the only enemy that will damage you if you jump on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Essentially like a spiny.
Yeah, yeah. They look like little Sonic the Hedgehog or Sonic's the Hedgehog.
Yep.
Yeah.
Little blue guys. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. They are probably the rarest enemy in this. Like, we don't see them very often.
Right. Once you've doubled back around, you fight another red Birdo. This time there's a mushroom block floor behind it. Mm-hmm. So if you decide that you don't really want to deal with trying to figure out what is going to be a huevo or huevo en fuego, you can get some mushroom blocks behind it to throw at it.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to 3-3, we are introduced to a new enemy, these albatrosses, which are these very angry
albatrosses.
Albatrosses, thank you. These angry birds that throw bombs at you, and bombs in this game have the shortest fuse of any bombs.
Yes.
And this is a bummer. Like, this is hard. Game does have like several difficulty spikes in it, actually. Like, it is much harder than Mario 3.
Yes. And weirdly, it has a reputation for being really easy. I think just off of the back of that, off of the back of the first world, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are quite a few fuck yous, including the fact that these bombs will just start piling up if you don't deal with them or move beyond, where you're going to find them here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This level is mostly inside. You go inside this fort, the locked door is right there at the beginning. And you end up having to climb up really high to get the key. There's a super jump shortcut that you can do here. If you pick up a ninja, deploy him a little bit higher up, and then super jump off of the back of him when he's at the apex of his jump, that will let you skip a large portion of this.
Yeah, which is useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is also where they introduce platforms that have sparks moving at different speeds.
Yes.
So if you can, you want to take these things out. You can. They're just normal enemies. You can kill them.
Yeah.
And you want to because they are a pain. Mm-hmm. Once you get that key in that door, we fight another Mauser. This one has a spark backing him up, but he's not particularly tough.
Right.
He's maybe a little bit quicker, and he still does not believe he has a mouse.
No.
After you kill him, we get into World 4 for the first time, which introduces the ice biome.
Yeah. This is tough.
This is super tough.
Yeah.
It's an ice level. There's not very much friction there. And we get introduced to this new enemy, these flurries, which again, you know, just show up in the RPGs. Like they're not very, I think there might be in Yoshi's Island, but they're very rare even there. Mm-hmm. Not a very frequent enemy. They're little snowmen guys. They run very quickly and will continue to they home in on you.
Yes.
Most enemies in this game just kind of have a set pattern. Like they're agnostic to your presence. Mm-hmm. These ones actually do try to run at you.
Yes. They move quickly across the ice, in a way that makes you think that the friction doesn't really apply to them. The way that you can manipulate them is to understand that they cannot turn very quickly. So kind of like the Phantos, they will slide, if they have to change direction.
Yep. So you can trick them into throwing themselves off the ledge.
Yes.
Yeah. As you kind of walk forward through, there'll be these fast moving trouters, those fish things. Mm-hmm. They'll jump up from the water below this ice bridge you have to go through.
Yeah.
At the end, it looks like a dead end. Again, just the weirdness of this game. And there's nothing to do. So you pull up the plant that's there, and it's a rocket that you immediately get into and takes you up to the next part of the stage.
And they use these a couple of times from now on. It is always a surprise.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's very goofy and
it ought
and
not cool. be.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And this takes you to the boss, which isn't really a boss. It's just an arena where you have shy guys riding around these cannons that will shoot bombs. They're called auto bombs.
Yep. Which you can then take the shy guy off and ride it, but you can't control it or anything, which would be cool. Yeah, but you can also just pick it up and toss it. So this is actually really easy. Mm-hmm. Now that you've gone up in a rocket, you're in 4-2, which takes place very high up in the sky. It is full of Bezos. Mm-hmm. Bezos are coming fast and furious. And you have to kind of avoid these as you move forward. And the second area, which is at this water line, where there are whales.
Yeah.
These cute little whales. And the way whales are coded is their spout, the water that comes out, is an enemy as well. So hitting the side of it will hurt you, but being on top of it, you can ride.
Yes. So that's a way to get up and get some power-ups, and it is necessary to navigate. This is the only time the whales show up, and it's very unsettling that they are just background kind of geometry, so they have no expression, really, aside from their high beams.
It's a living.
I'm a level.
Yeah.
After you get past these whales, you get to the third area, which has this long kind of row of spikes, and you have to ride one of these cannons to get over it.
Yeah.
So again, you know, don't throw these cannons. Also use them as a tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you get to the end of this, we fight another Red Birdo, but this one's on ice. So you have that slippery kind of lack of traction.
Yes.
When you fight him.
Yeah. Taking you to 4-3, which is kind of our first snowy area. Looks a little bit like the Green Hill, except it's, you know, a new color palette. There's a large body of water here. It's kind of neat because it introduced this idea a little bit by making you ride the Shy Guy's cannon over the spikes. There's really no obvious way to proceed. There's a Birdo here outside of a boss arena. You think, that's strange. And the logical leap you have to make is to jump on top of one of the Birdo's eggs and actually ride it over the lake to the castle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, you know, you maybe won't know how to do that. If you kill the Birdo, I don't know at camera exactly what happens. Mm. I think you can, there's either a door you can go back into to respawn him or you starve to death. Cause there's no timer or anything. So you just kind of have to reset your system. Watch the rest of the game on YouTube. So you have to ride that egg, which is kind of cool. Once you get to this castle, the first portion is just climb up these narrow ice platforms with flurries rushing at you. Pretty tricky, actually. And then moving down is even trickier. Because they put two different kinds of shy guy next to each other, and one walks off and one doesn't. Mm-hmm. And you want to ride that red shy guy that does walk off down because there's a row of spikes.
Yes.
So you want to, while dealing with the one that doesn't go down, and they'll kind of overlap at points and such.
Yes.
So yeah, I want to separate them so you can get on the red one, and all within a brief moment of time mm-hmm. to get on the red one to walk over the spikes.
Yes. And it gets even trickier because you end up getting the key and you end up being chased by Fanto on the ice when both of you have this kind of low friction momentum on you.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up being a little bit unpredictable.
Yep. And you can't, if you're running at full speed with no friction, if you throw, you will throw very far in front of you and risk losing the key.
Yeah.
So you need to be very careful if you throw the key in order to get rid of Fanto.
Yeah.
You can take this slow and steady and take care of it if you'd like. It's probably, you know, but if you want to do it quickly, it is much harder.
Yeah.
I'm getting this boss, Fry Guy, who is a big sentient fireball. Wart gave life to this entity, which is created from fire. He
Why
spits
am
fireballs
I?
When he is mad. And what do I eat? And he is not super creative. I still like this boss.
Mm-hmm.
It is mostly about the arena.
Yeah.
He kind of moves in lilting figure eights that kind of vary a little bit. And you have to get mushroom blocks, get them up towards the middle, and drop them on him from above.
Yeah.
As he shoots out his little babies that will come at you as well, that you also need to extinguish with mushroom blocks.
Yeah. Feels like a weird outlier in the bosses, honestly. For most of the other ones, it ends up being like, you know, the boss ends up being pretty stationary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one that ends up being the super bummer to me is Claw Grip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I still like this guy okay, but he does feel a little bit like an outlier.
Yeah.
You know, it's bosses in Mario games are typically not good.
Right.
I feel like I don't think it's a series that does that really well. Like, weirdly, it was my favorite thing about Odyssey, which mm-hmm. was not, you know, my favorite. I liked Mario Odyssey. I didn't love it, but I thought the boss fights were generally really good. But like, even the 3D Marios, like Mario 64, I don't like the boss fights very much.
No.
You know, like there's a lot of those games I just don't think. And any of the 2D ones where it's the Koopa Kids, I don't care for them.
No.
Like Mario 3, Mario World, any Koopa Kid boss. I know you don't fight Koopa Kids in Mario World, but any of those kind of boss fights I don't like.
So World 5 takes you back to the Green Hill biome, except it's after dark. It's mm-hmm. nighttime.
Yeah, all the characters pull down their pants and continue to do the same platforming, but they move really slowly because their pants are around their ankles.
Right. Yeah, so the first major area here is this underground waterfall, and this is the first time where the game expects you to use the Trouters as platforms.
Yeah, I think this is a big difficulty jump.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is just a one unit thing you have to jump on. And yeah. Unless you are playing Peach, like, it's very tricky.
Yeah.
I think,
they start out being relatively in sync with each other, but later on, like, there's very little overlap, very little functional overlap where you can make the leap because they're out of phase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The end of this, if this is the one I think it is, also has a, you get the potion at the beginning of this level,
mm-hmm.
and then it has that little bit at the end where the mushroom falls on. You have to actually, like, get above the geometry.
Yeah, you have to, like, clear a mushroom block away.
Yeah, which is just tricky to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up doing this whole level with just the two health.
Yeah. The boss of this is a new kind of Birdo. On the NES, it is white. I think that the white and green Birdos are functionally the same, and mm-hmm. that they both just fire. Fireballs, so you end up needing to use mushroom blocks.
Yep. After you beat this Birdo, we get to area 5-2, which is this area with lots of these trees and these hoopster enemies. These ladybug things crawling up and down them, mm-hmm. and you have to use them to get between these platforms.
Yes.
And similar to all the enemies, like, you want to ride them, you want to not come at them from the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The second area, when you get up even higher, is another vine crawling section, except you're dealing with Sniffit Crossfire. So you have to, mm-hmm. make your ascent in between the refractory periods.
Yep. While they're still basking in the afterglow.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you get this third area, which is this big, fall down in this narrow tunnel line with spikes.
Yeah. It's where it turns into Mega Man 2.
Yeah. Mega Man 2 stuff. As you fall this, at the bottom, you fight a red Birdo, but he has some eggs, but he has Trouters jumping out as well to support him.
Mm-hmm.
5-3 is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, this level is silly as hell.
Yeah.
This is just the sky is blotted with these albatrosses. We're all tossing bombs. They're also just freestanding bombs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is them doing the beginning of Saving Private Ryan, but for Mario 2.
Yeah.
You know, like, Saving Private Shy Guy. Yeah. Rye Guy. Saving Private Rye Guy is what this is. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's like, it's quite a bit, honestly.
Yeah. Shy Ryan.
Yeah.
Saving
Private Frygar.
Yeah. Love it.
Yep. It's very, kind of brief, but intense. Mm-hmm. And what you're trying to do is get inside of this tree. Mm-hmm. And the ascent of this is pretty neat, actually, because the logical way to do it is to do the wraparound. Actually, there are panzers around and the platforms are arrayed diagonally. So you want to run off the left to get to the right, to get to the next kind of area. The overall effect seems to be like running up the inside of a hollow tree.
Like a spiral.
Yeah, like around the edges. It's kind of neat, actually.
Once you get through that, you get this this little arena again before the boss, this kind of sky area with treetops. You need to get on a Pidgeot magic carpet and then throw him at the next one, mm-hmm. Jump on the next one and continue to chain those until you get to a Red Birdo. Red Birdo opens the, which he fought a million times, mm-hmm. not a big deal, but he opens up to Claw Grip.
Yeah. What does the manual say about Claw Grip? Why does he belong here?
Well, Claw Grip, he grows suddenly,
okay.
and is surprisingly skilled at throwing rocks.
Cool.
All right. Here's the reason why I think Claw Grip is bullshit. Is previously with Mauser, we've been taught that you can jump under things to grab them.
Uh-huh.
At least in the NES version, you can't do that with the rocks. You have to wait for them to land and then pick them up.
Yeah,
or jump on top of them and pick them up.
It's much easier in the All-Star version.
Okay. Yeah, you can't catch these.
Right.
The same way you can catch bombs. And there's not a whole lot to him. He just tosses rocks at you.
Yeah, he does it pretty constantly. There's not a lot of how the Birdos do it in batches of three. Here, he just kind of does it whenever.
Yep. Just kind of tosses a whole bunch of them. And it just ends up being like, I just had to tank him.
Yeah.
Because you can't, if you could catch them in the air, you could do it quickly. As is, like, all that time picking up rocks, like, I'm probably going to get hit.
Yeah.
Or I'm like picking them up or landing on them in the air and doing the pickup animation. Mm-hmm. The big thing about catching something from below is you skip that animation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, frustrating. Yeah.
At least you only fight him once.
Yeah, he only gets one time to shine. after you beat him, you go on to World 6, which is another desert, the tougher desert.
Yes, where there is very little terra firma to be seen.
Yep, and quicker quicksand.
Yeah.
Like, much quicker. Like, once you get into it, you have to tap the A button really fast to not die.
To not succumb.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
After you do so, after you get through that first kind of desert area, and there are, cobrats and the normal hooligans here as well. Once you get that, you get to this cave, you have a locked door, and there are a bunch of pots where you had to kind of pick the right one that has the key.
Yeah.
And you go through it, doesn't have, all the rest of them have solid ground, and this one just has desert. Mm-hmm. You have to keep digging into the pot.
Yeah. So if you're just kind of saying, like, okay, well, I need to pick the right one, it will look like they're empty. You have to determine that you can go below it as well, which is kind of a neat little trick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The boss here, again, we've got the Green Birdo firing fireballs constantly. No real trick to it aside from that. 6-2 is real brief. You're high up on some of these bluffs. And really, it is a challenge of riding these albatrosses across. Mm-hmm. You need to jump between them. Like, one will run into a platform, so you have to jump onto the next one, which will be safe. Sometimes mm-hmm. you can jump onto some Bezos, which is tougher because they're one tumble width wide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. As opposed to the two.
Mm-hmm.
So just tricky platforming on top of enemies here to get to the end, to get to a green Birdo. Mm-hmm. This has a smaller arena. But there's a platform above it where you can drop blocks onto him.
Yeah.
You don't have enough to kill him. Once you dropped a block, you might have to go make a little run down there to pick it back up.
Right.
And get him.
Yeah.
After you beat that Birdo, you get to 6-3. This begins outdoors, but eventually after doing some platforming stuff, you get into a cave that is ba-bomb full.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to use these to destroy the correct walls to
which,
move forward.
Which involves kind of mastering their timing.
Yep.
Yeah. There's an extended vine climbing section again with lots of wraparound. This feels like the last real test of that for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Getting you to the boss area, there's a Red Birdo, but this kind of gives way to fighting another Triclide.
Mm-hmm. And once you get through there, there is, again, it's very similar to the last one,
mm-hmm.
Slightly different arena, but, same basic idea.
Yeah.
So it was under the temple biome, world 7, the final world. Lots of the platforms here are destructible.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those blocks that can be destroyed, and Albatrosses drop bombs, which again have those super short fuses. So a bomb hitting you won't just necessarily do damage. It can also take away your footing.
Yeah. It's only really a problem if you don't move very quickly.
Yes.
But it theoretically could be.
Yep.
Yeah. You get to the end, there's really nothing. Like there's a door potion, in a small little room. Kind of the logical leap that you have to make is that, okay, there are Albatrosses here. You can ride them all the way back to the beginning. The way forward is actually behind where you started.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And once you get there, there's a kind of platforming, challenge with these blocks.
Yeah.
Where if you jump, you can't go back down.
Right. They're one way.
They're one way. And there are enemies forcing you to kind of do like little tiny short jumps to avoid them so you don't lose too much progress
mm-hmm.
as you go through here. It's kind of tricky. Like if you haven't played it, look it up.
Yeah.
It's a little bit goofy. And this ends with kind of a nothing. It ends with a gray Birdo.
Yeah. No big deal.
So
taking us to the absolutely massive 7-2.
Yeah, the final world. Which is the inside of Wart's Castle, which introduces all of these conveyor belts.
Right.
Which are new.
Yeah. Is there any, I mean, so it's an easy question to answer. It is pronounced how common conveyor belts are in video games to how rare they are in the actual world.
It's almost like a quicksand ratio.
Yeah. Like I don't really encounter conveyor belts, and I was absolutely fascinated with them as a kid.
I guess other than like airports.
Yeah.
You know, like people movers. Sure. But like an actual conveyor belt, like up until grocery store, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's a conveyor belt. I wonder if it's just more common.
Yeah.
You know, in the 80s, like everywhere, every home had one.
Yep.
You know, I would like a conveyor belt that carries my bed to the kitchen. You know,
not a conveyor belt that just kind of carries food to you like a sushi go round.
That's smart too. I don't know. I mean, both would work.
Yeah. I wouldn't turn my nose up.
Yeah. I love people movers on the airport because, you know, if you're very tired, don't walk on them. I almost always do, though, because it feels like you're walking at like not super speed, but like it just turns any walk into like a power walk.
Yep.
When you walk on them, and it's very fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just get the sense of momentum that is like kind of actually fun.
Yeah. And there's always the little kid trying to run against it.
Go backwards. Same thing with escalators.
Yep.
There's some kid who's like trying to run up the escalator, and it's like, I've been there, son.
Yep.
Like you can do it, but you're not going to like what,
it's not worth
what
it.
Happens once you get to the top. It's not worth it, my friend.
Yeah.
Like nothing happens. You don't get a reward.
Yeah. It's not like the mayor comes out and gives you the key to the city.
Yeah. Like we've all done it.
Yeah.
Can you bend a coat hanger as well? Because we can all do that to you. Like, listen, the Kid Olympics are nothing. Like you need to learn that all this is horse shit.
Yeah.
Sooner than later. Get a Roth IRA junior. Join me in adulthood.
So yeah. Sad. Kind of like kind of low key the saddest thing we've ever said, I think.
Listen, me and Mauser are gonna adopt you and show you the ropes.
Let's see here. So this is a very big level, and that length is compounded by the fact that there are two ways through it that actually kind of double back on each other.
Yeah, like a Deus Ex level.
Yeah.
Like it's weird that you can kind of go back through. Mm-hmm. So there's a downward path. There's this long drop down a mushroom block walkway that has sparks.
Yeah. This whole area is Spark City.
Yeah. This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
No, like, neither is this platform.
Yep. After you get down to the bottom, you find that you have to do this chain ascent with more sparks that are out of phase running up and down the chains, which is very tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping from chain to chain. I actually don't like the way that jumping from chain to chain works in this.
No.
You kind of do a controlled fall while holding up and hope you catch it.
Yeah.
It's not a satisfying feeling, I think.
Yeah. It feels like an accident of the physics system that they decided to design levels around.
Yeah.
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 You can go the other way too. Eventually though, you need to get to this red Birdo that instead of holding an orb in its belly is holding a key.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that gets you through into the boss arena. This is a real it's a real betrayal.
Yeah, this is awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
But it is a betrayal.
Yeah. you think you get to the bird face.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not a cop. I'm gonna ride the bird face.
And he says, you know what, I'm sick and tired of your shit. Yep. And when you pick up the orb, he starts floating around and attacking you.
Yep. And you have to hit him with blocks.
Mm-hmm.
and actually kill him. He's just, he's not a very hard boss. He just kind of moves in those loops,
mm-hmm.
Those lazy loops. And the boss doesn't say anything about it. The manual doesn't say anything about him.
Well, it would spoil it.
Because you can't spoil it. Like, he's a mimic.
Yeah.
Maybe the earliest mimic I ever encountered.
Maybe.
You know, yeah. So that's something for sure.
I call it a betrayal. I'm not actually angry at it. It's just you know, like, oh yeah, good on you for building up a sense of, trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And once you beat him into submission, he actually does stop and open.
Yes.
You can go into him to get to the final boss fight with Wart.
Yes.
Wart is the most mischievous of in the world of all in the world dreams. He created monsters by playing with the dream machine.
why didn't somebody call the dream police? Yeah.
So that's how these monsters came out, because he messed with this weird fucking Dr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium device he has in the middle of his chamber.
Yeah, and I think he used up all the good parts, so now it is just spitting out vegetables, yep. which is bad news, because Wart hates vegetables.
He really hates them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the trick is he's probably never had them cooked right, is the thing. You know, a lot of people grow up and just like canned shit, you know,
you can't just eat veg all and then say you don't like vegetables.
Right.
You know, like you don't even dislike Brussels sprouts. Like, they just need to be, you need that Maillard reaction, my friend.
Yes. No. Get them caramelized.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But don't overcook them, because that's bad too.
They're very hard to overcook. Right. I've been watching a YouTube channel about, from America's Test Kitchen.
Hmm.
They talk about Brussels sprouts, how they can handle like a lot of cooking before they get bitter. Yeah. And that's why you really want to char up that one side of them.
Oh yeah. I've overcooked them and got them bitter. So, you know, nothing's impossible, folks.
Oh yeah. Like nothing is impossible to literally overcook.
Right.
Like that's asbestos. Don't eat it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Asbestos, it belongs in your lungs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what Wart does, you know, he's off on his own little platform over there. He will spit these barrages of bubbles at you. The vegetables alone will not hurt him. You have to throw the vegetables when his mouth is open, literally forcing him to eat his vegetables. And that is what causes him to submit mm-hmm. to you.
I find Wart pretty easy.
Yeah.
For the end boss of this, like the bubble pattern he does.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially shoots them up in the air and they fall at kind of spacing, but they fall slow enough to where it's very easy to get between them.
Yeah.
And then you it's easy to toss because he gets stunned when you toss a vegetable in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So you stand next to him between those barrages, throw the vegetable in his mouth, and just go back down to dodge zone.
Yeah.
I find this would be a pretty easy final boss, which is fine. Just that like he's not super tough.
Yeah. The tricky part that I always run into is that the window for when he is vulnerable, you know, when his mouth mm-hmm. is open, it is slightly different. Like the hitbox is different than the timing of his animation for when his mouth is open.
Mm.
So it's a little bit sloppy around the edges there. So like I will end up wasting more shots than I think I ought to.
Yeah. Yep. After you kill him, I think it's 5. Vegetables. I think it's more than 3.
No.
You put 5 vegetables in him and he dies, and we get the ending here where Mario goes into a pot, pulls the plug off of it, which releases all the fairies, which mm-hmm. like, oh, that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Carries Wart off screen in order to
just to dismantle you know, him.
Make sure he doesn't appear in another Mario game.
Yeah, I guess.
Like literally memetically erase him. You know, because he's not shown up. Anything else as far as I know.
I think they ripped him apart and then fed him back into the dream machine as raw material.
Yeah. This is how we got fucking K. Rool.
Oh shit.
You know, it sucks. They gave him a fate worse than death.
Yeah. And then in case you forgot, and also in case you decided to trust the intro, which says that Mario woke up. No, he didn't actually wake up. It was a dream within a dream where you woke up and went into the dream world. Here he is actually, you know, he is actually in bed. He wakes up briefly, then falls back asleep, and we see the cast roll by in the mm-hmm. credits.
It's a little bit cheap that it says it's always all a dream as a twist when in fact we went to a dreamland.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, bud, you know, like, yeah, no shit. He goes back to sleep. That sprite of him sleeping is great.
Mm-hmm. It's detailed. Awesome, it's really detailed.
Big detailed, beautiful, beautiful sprite.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's Super Mario Brothers 2 USA.
I'm looking at the Mario Wiki, which is a place nobody should ever go. I forgot that Wart turns up in Link's Awakening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of things show up in Link's Awakening, which is super really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is Super Mario Brothers 2. I love this game, Gary.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my fave. Mm-hmm. of those Nintendo Marios.
Yeah.
I like the enemies. I like the pace of play that comes from it. Like sometimes it is too frantic, but by changing your verb from jump on an enemy, which is a one step process, to jump, lift, throw, which is a three step process, mm-hmm. it slows down the pace of play in a way that reminds me of like the difference between like a Gears of War and a Resident Evil 4 or something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it just like there's a similar proportion there where it's just like, oh, like you have to be a little bit more thoughtful. Mm-hmm. And being able to ride on enemies opens up a lot of like kind of puzzle things, which in Mario, which are kind of non-existent in Mario 1.
Yeah.
Mario 1, like the equivalent of that is getting warp zones, like breaking the geometry.
Getting above the stage. Yeah.
Or those terrible, terrible trial and error based fourth stages.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, if you go up the top path, you get a ding. If you go to the bottom path, you get a murmur. And you just had to memorize how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? The hand stace from RE2 remake? You know, like just like don't trial and error me. Trial and error in that respect is annoying. Yes. Right. The trials aren't fun. So it's not fun. Mm-hmm. And then Mario 3, the secrets come from pushing at the boundaries.
Yeah.
Going off stage. Here, the secrets come from like a lot of times using enemies in creative ways. Or doing weird shit with the relationship between like an A and a B world mm-hmm. in a way that feels really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Like there's shades of Link to the Past in the way that the A world can affect the B world. Like when you have to like remove a block to make a mushroom fall down, mm-hmm. you know, that's neat.
Yeah. I just love the way that they complicate the level design just enough to have these multiple pass through, you know, again, it is that right mix between mystery and discoverability. And that is something that when carried forward, into later Mario games ends up being an element of the best of those to my mm-hmm. mind. You know, in talking about this and in putting together the outline, it's remarkable how much, you know, most of these levels have something they're about. Right. Not all of them. Like there are definitely weak, you know, weak levels, but, you know, they do have these little ideas in them that, again, force you to look at the enemies in a different way. And it feels like they make great use of that shift in mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very thoughtful game.
Yeah. Very thoughtful. You know, very worthy. It's Miyamoto's favorite.
Nice.
Of those other than the first one, mm-hmm. I want to say. And of course, he has to like that first one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is, it is a wonderful, wonderful game. I'm glad we covered it.
Yeah.
For the thing. And it got me thinking about, you know, just the weird NES sequels too. And eventually, like, I would like to do Zelda 2 and Castlevania 2 on here.
Oh, I've been champing to those forever.
Yeah. Which are not as successful.
Right.
But are very interesting. Like that was just such a fun, wild time for Nintendo. And all three of those games are really maligned, like this one included, this one, the least of which mm-hmm. Are a little bit maligned, and all of which is like a, you know, do not need to be maligned and are interesting and cool on their own merits.
Yes.
And within the scope of history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tune in whenever, probably 2020 sometime when we find out what Castlevania 2's Doki Doki Fact is. It was actually a promotion for a motor oil.
I have no idea. I know Zelda 2's, which is I am error. Is not necessarily a translation problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you.
If you have anything to say about Super Mario Brothers 2, Pyre, or Bioshock Infinite, hit us up at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Please do. The deadline for that is February the 15th. Similarly, mm-hmm. March the 15th is the deadline for the games we were talking about then, which is one of the straggler theme months, Survival and Desperation.
Mm-hmm. So if you have anything to say about Papers, Please, Frostpunk, or Stalker, mm-hmm. hit us up by March 15th.
Yeah. If you're a patron, you can also submit your questions and prompts when we put up the when we put up that topic on patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this and you didn't listen to the last episode, listen to the Dispatch.
Yeah.
It's different than the response episodes. It's Meteor. The response mm-hmm. To those has been really positive.
Yes.
Yeah. And hit that up because it is different. You know, we know that not everybody listened to the response episodes. They were interested in other people's thoughts mm-hmm. on this stuff. This is a little bit more than that. So check that out.
Yes. Gary, we had a lengthy digression about Super Mario Maker in the middle of this. Do you think it is about time that we discuss what we're going to be talking about at the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee this coming April? Yeah.
Sure.
So we're going to be returning to the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee. That is going to be April. Oh, hey, there's Sven Gulli.
Sven Gulli will be there again, which I love.
April 12th, 13th, and 14th.
We don't know exactly when our panel is, but stay tuned. We'll be tabling. Come say hi to us. We'll be in Milwaukee. Come buy us bratwurst. And we're going to be talking about not necessarily so games, creative games.
Yes.
So as a topic. So not specifically level makers, even though we're going to talk about that a little bit. But this kind of an overview survey course of level makers and Mario Maker and MTV Music Generator.
Mario Paint, you know, we're going to get up on that shit.
Yep, Mario Paint. Generally, you know, a very brief, maybe not so much an all-inclusive history as just kind of a creation as a game and what those types of games have to offer and kind of interrogating our own fandom, because that's something that we both really appreciate.
Yes.
I think are games that allow that. And we will talk a little bit about Mario Maker as well, at least briefly, but primarily probably older stuff.
Yes.
So, yeah, come check that out.
Please do.
This is the first month we will have a premium episode. Yes. If you, so the third game we're covering this month will be BioShock Infinite. On this public feed, you will hear the, up through the generalities. So we'll talk all about the systems, all about the game's kind of place in the franchise. It's ridiculous troubled development, probably a little bit about the way cooler versions of it that they showed many times, that there are 1,000 YouTubes that are just like the BioShock Infinite we could have got.
Right.
But then once it gets time to get to the nitty gritty and what actually happens in beat by beat, that will be for patrons.
Yes.
In order to get those, that is $5. $5 a month if you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. For that $5, you get a lot though. Yeah. We're sensitive to how much, you know, $5 a month, you know, that can mean different amounts to different people. So you get that. You get episodes of Bonfireside Chat Rekindled. You get 2 episodes of Abject Suffering per month, and you get to submit prompts and questions for those dispatch episodes that we do.
We think you get quite a bit for that.
And you get even more if you go up to $10. You get all of those old episodes, as well as Duck Feed Presents, which has been our kind of has been very fun. We've done a Days of Future Cast and kind of side guided episode so far, and then the first episode Winging It with Will, which is me and Will's on location brief game talk where we talked about Fallout 76. So keep an eye on that. So, you know, again, we understand that different amounts of money mean different things to different people, but we want to make sure anybody who does choose to support us is getting significant returns for that. And we really do appreciate everyone who does and everyone who's considered it.
Yeah. Thank you. I think that's everything.
That is indeed all. Ratings, reviews, of course, useful, all those normal things. But until next time, who is Fry Dog?
Yeah.
Who is Shy Dog?
Until next time, don't go to sleep.
Don't go to sleep. Sleep till Brooklyn, paisanos.
A real New York slice.